Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
May, pressure coming by Judon. May steps up, looking to keep it. May, touchdown with a late flag. Judon could not catch up with Drake May. Let's see what the penalty is. And the Patriots are celebrating.
High noon, Jones and Keefe. Patriots Monday here on WEEI. Drake May talks to WEEI afternoons. This afternoon, if you missed Mike Vrabel earlier today, it's on the Audacy app, Audacy. Get it on your phone. Free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. You can use the rewind feature to go back and listen to that. You can also listen live on the iHeartRadio and TuneIn apps. We'll get to the Red Sox and Yankees later on this hour. Did the Red Sox do enough this weekend? Alex Cora sounds like he's getting nervous. What's his job security looking like? But let's get back to the Pats, their win yesterday. They're on the board, Keith.
Yes.
First win of the Vrabel era, first win of the season. I don't know. What'd you think? Better, worse than you thought? We both picked them on Friday.
Yeah.
How'd it go based on your expectations?
Yeah, it's funny because I thought they were going to win, although the way the game played out, I thought the offense was way better than I expected, and the defense was way worse than I expected. It still netted out to being a win. You had highs and lows in the special teams, literally on back-to-back plays, so that was almost a wash. But yeah, it was a wild game, but I didn't think they were going to score 33. Now, I know that wasn't all the offense.
Right.
But Drake May had his best game as a pro. Now, it's been less than 17 games that he has started in the NFL, so it's still early on. But this was, it's funny, as uncomfortable as he looked a lot of the Raiders game, he was so comfortable and so in control. This
dialed
game,
in right he from was, the start.
He was absolutely locked in. And you actually saw him play, and you're like, oh, that's an athletic quarterback. Whereas week one, you're like, what is he doing? Like, he's nervous to run. He's kind of hesitating. He felt like there was a rush when there wasn't, and kind of vice versa. Whereas this game, they got him rolling out. Like, even that Mac Hollins 8-yard touchdown, that's like an athletic quarterback move. He kind of rolls out to his right. He's kind of running on the fly and then hits him perfectly. So he wasn't afraid to run. He picked up yards when they were there, but he didn't, like, overdo it by any means. And then he was locked in. I mean, he had that great pass to Stevenson. Both touchdown passes were solid, like highlight reel, put him in there at the end of the year type of plays. Nice touch on the one to Booty. Nice rollout to Hollins. So
right on the move, yeah. Like in control, accurate on that play. There was another one to Hollins that wasn't, yeah. But that was a good throw.
This is what we were looking for. I mean, I'll speak for myself. This is what I was looking for because there were some ups and downs throughout the career of Drake May. I was giving him a lot of excuses for what was around him last year. The week one game was disappointing, and all this discussion about the new offense, his relationship with Josh, is he able to pick up everything? How does Vrabel view the offense? It was only week two, but it felt like they needed a performance like this, and they got it. So I would say, like, arrow way up on Drake May, arrow way up on Ramondre Stevenson, who had a really good game. Milton Williams, maybe one guy on defense, like, arrow way up. But then still, like, defensively, you give up over 300 yards passing again.
Yeah, who do you blame? Like, it's hard to pick out a specific guy on defense, but just the defense gave up way too many explosive plays again. They couldn't.
Yeah, like Alex Austin, like, yeah, you're in a tough, yeah, spot. You know, you are in a tough spot. You probably shouldn't be in that role. Like, they need Christian Gonzalez back. He's not. So it's like, I'm not going to lose my mind at him, but he definitely let you down a couple of times. Overall, they're not very good at tackling. Like, there were times where you're like, oh, make the tackle there, and it's 3rd and 5, and oh, no, it's a first down.
That was one of the things, yeah, Vrabel today. Yeah. Vrabel spoke with the media in the last half hour or so. He said something similar, although in a much nicer way, about Christian Gonzalez, that he said to the Greg Hill Show today that, you know, there's a chance Gonzalez could play this weekend, though it doesn't sound likely. He talked about Terrell Williams in there. And he also had that answer about the missed tackle. Yeah. He sounds frustrated by the missed tackle.
And we asked Christian Ellis about it, and he was like, well, I'll speak for myself. But he was right. I mean, the whole team has just left some tackles out there. And I know Devon Achane is a guy that, you know, is fast and probably is tough to bring down. And, you know, Tyreek Hill, like, they have some good playmakers there. But it felt like a lot of extra yards were there for the Dolphins based on them not being able to, you know, bring him down to the ground as soon as they should.
I thought Vrabel gave an interesting answer after the game yesterday about the Patriots and their attitude. You got to respond to getting punched in the mouth. He referenced a street fight earlier. We played that clip for you.
Street fight.
This is another answer that I found interesting from Vrabel.
That we're not front runners, and that's a big thing in this league because, you know, when you play in the National Football League, you have to be willing to take some punches, and that's okay. But you got to give more than you take because that's the nature of this business. Haven't been in a long time. There's pros on the other side. There's good players on the other side. There's good coaches. So just, again, proud of our team. You know, it would always be about the players now and forever.
Okay. You gotta give more than you take.
Forever.
Now and forever.
You're gonna get punched in the mouth. That's the NFL. That's the league. But he was right. The Patriots, you could say they were good yesterday. You could say they were lucky yesterday. You could say they were everything in between. Just look at the last couple of drives, starting with the Mapu interception, which is just a brutal throw from Tua.
Yep.
You think the Patriots should have the game sealed there. It's 2:21 to go. They're up a field goal, rather. They should be able to run out the clock, you would think. They don't, because they passed on 2nd and 8.
Terrible.
You mentioned the Hollins touchdown earlier. I feel like it was almost the exact same play, rolling out bootleg right, Hollins going right of the formation. They decided to pass there. It was incomplete. It stopped the clock. What'd you think of that decision?
Bad. Oh, that was a bad decision because you're trying to figure it out. Now, the Dolphins had 2 timeouts. That was just the 2-minute warning that stopped it, right? So their first play was the Ramondre run on that quote-unquote drive.
Correct. So they ran for 2 yards, took it from 2:21 down to 2, and then this is the first play out of the 2-minute warning.
And, yes. Obviously you can't, you're going to have to pick up a first down. You can't just milk the whole clock down. But you gave them an extra timeout by doing it that way. And so they still have 2 timeouts to go. So now you're like, all right, you better get a first down. Or they're not only are they going to have a possession, they're going to have a good amount of time to move down the field. And then, that alone was dumb. That they should have ran the ball again or come up with something that was even an easier completion.
I think they most, or do what they said on the broadcast, where if the throw's not there, take the sack.
Right,
clock run. There are other things you could have done there to at least have the Dolphins burn a timeout
Although, is taking the sack worse because of the
takes you out of field goal range? Maybe. I mean, at least try to run and pick it up. Maybe just straight up taking a sack for a 10-yard loss isn't a great idea.
Well, then Morgan Moses almost took him out of field goal range.
We'll get to the kicker in a moment. So they complete the next pass to Steph Diggs, keeps the clock running, although the Dolphins call a timeout. So it's 4th and 2.
Right.
Morgan Moses has his 3rd false start of the game. They were going to go for it on 4th and 2. They don't. Vrabel will tell you he had all the confidence in the world in Ande Borregalis to kick the field goal from 53, which he ultimately hit.
Yeah.
But he was about to pass on a field goal to go for it on 4th and 2. What'd you think of that sequence of events?
Yeah, that was pretty wild. I don't blame Vrabel for wanting to go for it on 4th and 2 because I didn't trust Borregalis.
I 1,000% thought that was the right decision. I don't even know if I would have kicked in that spot.
I might have gone for 4th and 7.
I didn't even agree with kicking there. I'm like, this kid has no chance of making it 4th and 2. I 100% would have gone
for
it there.
That's back-to-back weeks, key 4th downs, false start.
Yeah, Morgan Moses screwed.
Had 3 false starts.
This is not a rookie. It's a 12-year vet.
Yeah, that was
bad. Who's now, by the way, in a walking boot after the game.
Well, can't hop off sides, I guess, if you're in a walking boot. Yeah. But so that was frustrating. I mean, I can't believe Borregalis made the 53-yarder.
Me either.
I cannot believe it because then I'm sitting there doing the math where you're like, all right, if the ball's at the 35, they snap it back to whatever, you know, like the 42, 43. So I'm like, they're going to have good field position here and only need a field goal if they're so they almost botched that whole final possession there. And then the kicker, who I was ready to just boot off the team and leave him in Miami, ends up coming through. But even still, you're like, defense needs a stop. So, yeah, already you take the field goal out of play. But because of the 2 missed extra points earlier in the game, now all it's going to take is a touchdown, extra point, and you lose. And it felt like for a second that happened.
Oh, it definitely felt that way. So Borregalis hits from 53. There's a minute 47 left.
A lot of time left. And they have one timeout left, too.
They did. Well, the broadcast is very confused about how many timeouts they had.
They can't stop it now.
They did have a timeout. So Borregalis seems like he saved his day with the made 53-yard kick. You're like, great, he made up for the 2 missed extra points. Good for him. Kicks it out of bounds. So the Dolphins start at their own 40.
Yeah.
Minute 47 to go with a timeout in their pocket. Devon Achane gets hit for a big play up the left sideline, clearly steps out of bounds at the New England 26. Patriots very fortunate there. They didn't do much to run him out of bounds on that play. It looked like it was going to be a touchdown. Pats would have 109 left to go down the field.
That was also the one. So you had the Mapu interception. Oh, no. I was going to say Was that the one that he missed the tackle? He had like a really bad missed tackle.
Yes,
later
Mapu.
On
they
too,
said
right?
on the broadcast, they're like, you did the right thing to try to force him out of bounds. I'm like, you could try to tackle.
You could also bring
yeah.
him down.
But yeah, anyway. So that was anyway, Mapu. And he didn't play a ton of snaps, but he was involved down the stretch he in was. Good and bad ways.
Correct.
So Achan steps out. Then the Dolphins turn into the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. False start and delay a game back-to-back.
Awesome.
So it's first and 20.
Yep.
They air one out to Waddle. Incomplete. They're facing a third and 12. Spillane gets a sack. And then our guy, the milkman
delivered,
closes it out with a sack to end the game. So too close for comfort. They certainly got some good fortune there. I asked you earlier, is that sustainable to win games like that against a team that, let's face it, probably is ready to bail on their head coach? Tua was calling out the, not the play calls, but the timing and communication from the sideline, getting play calls in quickly down the stretch, which I imagine is a direct shot
no.
at Mike McDaniel.
No.
Yeah,
he did that last week, too.
Did he? You have McDaniel after the game, too. Do you have this? Keith, you were asking for this earlier.
This is great stuff.
This is McDaniel after the game. So just listen to this and keep in mind.
This is who you beat.
This is who you were playing.
To win games, you have to win the game, not lose the game, honestly. And that is how you lose the game. You're moving the ball down the field. You're first and 10, and then you find yourself at second and 20. You know, that was critical.
So I agree with everything you said there. I'm not going to argue with any of it. You got to win to win.
To win games, you have to win the game.
Sure.
Lose the game.
Honestly.
Don't lose the game.
Yeah,
so to answer your question, I would say defensively and even special teams, that's not sustainable.
No.
Like, we'll see what the offense can do. I mean, that was a near perfect game for Drake May. So you're not going to have 15 more of those. But now that we've seen it, like, you know what he's capable of. This is the stuff we were talking about last week where, you know, game-winning drives, right? Because it's like, well, it's one thing for teammates to like the guy, respect the guy, but if you haven't actually been out there on the field when they've performed really well or they've won a game late, it's hard to really have that level of confidence in it. So I think it was a great day for the offense. I think defensively, they still got to be kicking themselves a little bit. This was not a top 10 defense type of performance. And then special teams was crazy. Like, that was such a roller coaster to not tackle. It looks like they had the punt covered, and then the guy squirts through, and then that could have been the game. And then thankfully, you then return a kickoff. So you can't count on returning kickoffs, and
no.
you better not allow punt return touchdowns and things like that. So they got to get all that cleaned up. That you can't rely on.
It's
though.
The most surprising thing is that they're not buttoned up. Like, Vrabel doesn't have them buttoned up. They won.
Yeah, but so many penalties and so many dumb mistakes.
They're sloppy. They're stupid. They were lucky yesterday. But I got to be honest, to answer my own question, I don't think it's sustainable. They have to clean a lot of stuff up. I also don't really care. They, like, desperately needed that win yesterday.
It's huge.
They never win there. You couldn't be 0-2. Losing to that clown show, that coach.
To win games, you have to win the game, not lose the game.
This is a series where you simply need to outscore the other team.
And they did.
Glennism.
They did that.
They
outscored the other team.
So, look, I want them to clean things up.
Yeah.
They have to do that to beat Pittsburgh at home this week, but do I really care? No. They needed the win above all else, so I'm willing to look the other way for a week.
Yeah, I don't care. And at least there was enough highlights to me. Not highlights, I mean like individual plays, but like takeaways that, hey, Drake May had an awesome game. Ramondre Stevenson had an awesome game. Milton Williams came up with a couple of really big plays. That is all very important. So it wasn't like, you know, like last night, for example, we were talking about the Falcons-Vikings game during What Happened. Like, Michael Penix, they won the game. But like, you're like, yeah, way to go, Penix Jr.
Oh,
Michael Penix Jr.
Oh.
But, like, that was a gross game. But you're like, hey, you won. It's like, yeah, but I don't know how much better our quarterback got or anything like that. So you'll take it. They do play a lot of teams that are pretty bad, although there might be a case where halfway through the season we look back and we're like, oh, the Dolphins are 1-7. You know what I mean? Like, they're horrible. Their coach might be gone. But you have to win those games.
I mean, look, they were more dominant against the Bears last year when they beat them, but it's kind of like, oh, you beat the Bears, you beat Caleb Williams, we're feeling good about it, and then you look back and you're like, oh, they never won again.
Right. No, that was it.
I'm not saying the Dolphins are going winless this year, but they might be a really, really lousy team that could fire their coach as of Thursday night.
But at the same time, Miami is an absolute hornet's nest for them, and they were actually underdogs going into the game.
You have to beat the trash. Your whole schedule's trash.
Yes, beat the trash.
You got to beat the trash, and honestly, against this schedule, maybe it is a little bit more sustainable than I give it credit for. You're playing trash all year long.
So I'm saying, you got Pittsburgh and Carolina the next two games. Carolina might be worse than Miami. But Carolina and Miami are like the Spider-Man meme. Carolina's trash.
Yeah, I can't believe you had them in the playoffs. That's kind of embarrassing that you had them as an NFC wild card team. That is a little embarrassing. 617-779-7937. You heard Keith there on Drake May. Did he turn a corner yesterday? It felt like he and Josh McDaniels got on the same page. Certainly an encouraging performance. We'll get to that. We have more on the Red Sox-Yankees later on this hour as well. We'll do all of it.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, just trust in him. I think you know we throw those kind of routes all the time in practice. Work on him. I throw him to him after practice. You know, working on him catching it over the shoulder. I thought I overthrew it at first, and he made a great play. So yeah, I thought he was about to score on it. You know, but I thought you know all three backs you know made a big impact today, and those guys up front you know blocked hard.
Drake May on his throw to Ramondre Stevenson, 55 yards, third and short, up the right sideline. Rolling to his right, eyes up, hit Stevenson in stride. Although you made the point, Keith, that's not an easy catch. It's a great catch.
No, it's an incredible catch, especially for him. I mean, way out extended like that and way down the sideline, which normally Stevenson isn't that far away from the line of scrimmage. So that was a great catch and then run after the catch. Yeah, one of the best plays of the game.
So I think it's one of the best plays May's made in his career. And, you know, the touchdown against Tennessee, again, was like a backyard, schoolyard type of play. This was a little more within the structure of the offense and more of like a routine, not a last-ditch play, a play that I think is repeatable. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was impressive. Two plays later, they're in the end zone. May runs. What do you know? He runs into the end zone. He had two darts, Keith.
Yeah, darts and scampers.
That was his scamper.
Yeah. I love both for him.
And I'd agree with something you said earlier today. I think it's the best game he's played as a New England Patriot. Now, you hope that there's more to come.
Oh, yeah.
You hope there's more performances like this. But in a week where there was a lot of criticism, and we were guilty of that, I don't think we threw in the towel on him big picture. I know you and I were never taking J.J. McCarthy over him like some others were. But I had questions. He was way worse week one than I expected against the Raiders. And yesterday, I think that proves the criticism against him week one was valid. Because we do expect a lot more. This is what he's capable of, so he needs to do more of this.
And it just felt he looked so much more comfortable. And I think part of it was, you know, he was willing to run a little bit. And so some of his throws were on the run. Some of the plays that broke down, he was able to kind of scamper, for lack of a better word. But the thing is, it's not like he needed 100 yards rushing. Nobody was asking for that. He only ran for 31 yards.
Yeah.
Right? On 10 carries or whatever, kneel downs and all that stuff. But like,
he had a long of 13 and he had the touchdown run of 6. But yeah, other than that, he was kind of bottled up. But he didn't look as awkward sliding and things like he did in week one.
It did. It felt like almost like a different guy.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, well, if he has that kind of confidence, that's only going to be a benefit going forward. But, you know, the key was, and they started it right off the rip, like they were able to run the ball. And Ramondre Stevenson had a good game and was constantly just kind of pushing forward. But I kind of felt like he needed one of those games. I know it's only 2 weeks. The team needed the win, first and foremost. That was the most important thing. You didn't want to start the year 0-2 and losing to those opponents. But you get the win. But then the next most important thing to me was a really good Drake May performance. So you got both of those things. Now, it doesn't mean there's not a lot of other areas to clean up and issues and stuff to kind of, if you're Vrabel, coach up this week and get ready for game number three. But check mark, right? Patriots win, Drake May plays well. Like, okay.
So I think it was a big win, not just for him. And, you know, we talked about this last week. J.J. McCarthy had a win. He comes crashing back down to earth last night on Sunday Night Football. But he had a win, and how do you build belief in the locker room? You need wins. I mean, you need to start doing it. You can't just promise that you're going to do it over and over again. You need to do it and build that belief, and it's the only way to do it. And not that this was a 2 minutes left, drive you down the field, walk-off win type of scenario, but stack up a win where you play well, where guys can start to believe in you. I think he needed that, and I think the whole Vrabel, McDaniels, May operation, I think they all needed that because there were some cracks last week. You can deny it. You can put your head in the sand. We've gotten a bunch of texts and calls today, tweets, Twitch comments. Oh, I guess there's not too much on his plate. They even did it on the broadcast yesterday. Did you notice that? Right early on in the game, they're like, I guess his plate's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, the head coach is
the
one.
That was the one part of the game that made it through in the beginning?
Yeah, well, that's true. That was when the audio was working on CBS yesterday.
Yep.
But it's like, it's the head coach who kind of invited the whole thing. And as you pointed out last week, Keith, Vrabel was like, yeah, we got to look at that. And by Friday, McDaniels is like, no, there's definitely not too much on his plate. It's like, okay, they're not even on the same page. Mm-hmm. May disagreed with Vrabel, saying there might be too much on his plate. So the three of them needed a bounce back week. And I think, anecdotally, we had references earlier, McDaniels, I think, had some good play calls this week. They got May on the move more, whether that's pure runs, not necessarily design runs, but he looked more mobile. He looked more explosive. They had him on the move more, bootlegs to his right and things like this, which they didn't do as much of in week one. I like some of the screens they called up. Those were perfectly timed play calls that McDaniels had. So I think it was a big bounce back for him. And let me give you one more note from Richie Rebar.
Richie Rebar.
And I saw this from Phil Perry. Week one against the Raiders, there was no pre-snap motion. We talked about this briefly last week. It looked like the McDaniels offense and really the Patriots offense of the last couple of years. No pre-snap motion. They were 30th in the league in pre-snap motion in week one. This past week, they were 57% of the time pre-snap motion. That's 14th in the league. So they went from third to last to middle of the pack with pre-snap movement. Drake May this year is 22 for 27, 82%, a couple of touchdowns. Without it, 27 of 42, 64%, one touchdown, one pick. So that puts him in a better spot, and I think it makes sense. The defense is under more pressure,
yep,
and it makes the decisions easier for him. So McDaniels responded, I think, in some tangible ways to week one, and I think he helped May this week.
Which is good, because we were wondering, you know, how much would he either change or sort of bend and do things a little bit more towards his quarterback, which he should do, right? I mean, that's absolutely what all good coaches should do, is all right, see what his guys do well and adapt. I had my doubts, though. Like, I didn't know,
same,
especially from week one to week two. Like, he might even be stubborn about it and be like, all right, let's give it a few more weeks, and then maybe you see more changes down the road if things aren't happening. But to make that kind of adjustment from week one to week two is a promising sign, you know, that all right, maybe he is going to do some different things. Because it was funny listening to some of the players talk about McDaniels during training camp, the guys like Hunter Henry who were on the team, or, you know, Kendrick Bourne when he was here, they didn't make it sound like anything was different. And then now you're starting to hear, well, no, there are some different things, and, you know, they're this, that, and the other thing. But it's just kind of funny, like, are you just taking everything you did even 4 years ago with that roster and trying to apply it to this roster, even though, you know, that team had Mac Jones and not Drake May. That team did not have a Steph Diggs. That team, you know, there's that didn't have a Trevion Henderson. Like, there are a lot of different pieces on this one. But so I do feel better overall about the offense after watching yesterday's game.
It's funny. One of the things we wanted him to do, he didn't really do. I mean, Diggs was not more involved.
No.
He played, I guess he technically moved up the pecking order in snaps because Pop Douglas was effectively phased out. But he still played less than Hollins and Booty in terms of snaps. He was targeted less this week than he was a week ago. Trevion Henderson, we wanted more Trevion Henderson and less from Andre.
No, really, very quiet Henderson game.
We really got the opposite.
Well, he held like four times.
He had like more penalties than carries.
All I heard about when he came out of college was his pass. Oh, he's such a good pass blocker. What a pass blocker.
They mentioned on the broadcast too.
Yeah.
You know, McDaniels said he's the most ready to do that compared to anybody else that they've had.
Maybe it's because he's holding all the time. I didn't factor
maybe
that in.
Is.
I didn't really break down the tape.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Maybe he's a really good pass blocker because he's just holding all the time.
Yeah.
But those are two things we asked for that didn't really come to fruition, and it was a better Drake May game. It was a better Josh McDaniels week. Neither of us are big fans of the McDaniels hire, so score one for him. I thought that was a good bounce back week for him.
Also a promising thing too, where you're like, you know, there's more from Henderson, so it's not like it's not like everybody played their best game,
right?
So it's like Diggs had four catches, Booty
32?
Had one.
Oh yeah,
you know what I'm saying? But like, all right, so now next week it's gonna be hard unless you're way out in front. I don't know, even if this team wants like the 50-50 balance, they ran the ball more than they threw it. Like, that's hard to do in the NFL. So I don't know if the game plan is going to allow for that every week, or, you know, in the second half, you're chasing it by a touchdown. Things might need to change. So you will get more from Diggs or Henderson in the passing game, or Kayshon Booty.
Yeah, yesterday was 29 rushes against 26 dropbacks, right? 23 attempts and three sacks.
Yeah.
So that feels more like the way Mike Vrabel wants to play it. I thought Drake May, after the game, because he got a lot of questions about his plate and the week, and he gave a lot of credit to his teammates. I thought there was one question where you sensed a little agitation from Drake. You tell me if you okay. read this the same way. This is May asked after the game about being amped up early on in some of these games.
Like I said, just stay cool and calm. I mean, I was feeling good warm-ups. Kind of down here in this humidity. This is what I grew up throwing in. And then North Carolina, and the ball feels good. So, spinning it well. And I think from there, just trying to get the guys, quick completions, kind of let the guys up front kind of get used to the flow of the game. And then, like I said, I think that was a one-time thing in Minnesota. I was playing, my best friend Sam Howell, so whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever. Well, I wonder if he, felt like he was starting to go down the road of, making excuses, and then he, cut himself
off. Yeah, maybe.
Whatever.
It also definitely wasn't a one-time thing. It happened against Minnesota, and then it happened against the Raiders.
Yeah, it was a one-time thing. It's like you airmailed the first throw of the game against the Raiders.
So.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't fully know how to read that. Maybe you're right. Maybe he just was like, making excuses. Like, whatever, man. But that was interesting. And look, he did. He looked dialed in right from the start yesterday.
Yeah.
So I agree. He wasn't overly amped up. That's something we wanted him to fix. They fixed it. 617-779-7937. Our good pal Coach is up in New Hampshire. What's up, Coach?
Hey, thank you for taking my call, guys. I know this is going to sound a little crazy, but I can't stand over the last number of years when the Patriots play scared and they play to hang on. And even though it was an incomplete pass, after the Mapu interception, they ran on first down, got stuffed, and Vrabel and McDaniels dialed up a pass. It was incomplete. It did stop the clock. Miami didn't have to use a timeout, so those are bad things. But here's what I see as good. Play aggressive. Play to win. Put the ball in Drake's hands. You needed a first down in that situation.
Okay, so Coach, it's interesting. We both said not a good play earlier today, but we were critical of Vrabel week one. We were critical of Mayo a lot last year for not being decisive, bold. And, I mean, that was decisive and bold. Didn't work.
Yeah,
but Coach is defending that decision.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can take that stance. I just feel like in the moment and with the lack of trust in the kicker and everything else, I would have just bled as much clock as possible. And if you want to say that's too conservative, all right. But I feel like at that point in the game, force Miami to call, get rid of at least all their timeouts and be like, all right, that team – go ahead. You got almost the length of the field to kind of figure this thing out. So, yeah, I mean, maybe we'll be looking back on it later and being like, hey, having the confidence in Drake May will prove to be a good thing, right? Like, sort of the reverse was true in the wind game with Mac Jones, where they're like, we're not going to have you throw it at all. Like, we don't trust you at all. We don't think you can do it. We're not going to allow you to do it. Whereas this one, maybe that's McDaniels and Vrabel being like, we believe in the quarterback to get this done rather than anybody else on the offense.
Okay. You guys can jump in. Second guesses, thoughts on the win yesterday. It was a mixed bag from the Patriots, but they did get their first win on the board. You can discuss on a Patriots Monday all day long. 617-779-7937. We also had a big series, Red Sox and Yankees over the weekend. Did the Red Sox do enough this weekend to sneak their way into the postseason, or did they miss out on an opportunity at that top wild card and, cutting down some distance in the AL East? We'll get to that with all your phone calls next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chapman stands tall. Glove in his right thigh. He sets. And here's the 0-2. And it is swung on and missed! 101! He stares at Caballero. And the Red Sox say goodbye to the New York Yankees. Maybe the most important win of the season. 6-4. They got all six in the first. And they held on and salvaged the series finale.
Will calls that one of the most important wins of the year for the Red Sox. Keith, agree or disagree?
Agree. I mean, there's the old adage, well, every game counts the same, but there is something about September baseball, the way the series was going. You're about to get swept by the Yankees. So even though you've dominated the Yankees all year, you're going to win the season series regardless. Well, now it's time to really look at the standings and see what Texas and even Cleveland are doing every night. And you wanted the division. That's gone. you want the top wild card spot. That's still in play. It would have been a lot tougher had you lost last night. So you really needed that one. So, yeah, with all the stakes, the fact that also it was the game that you ended up, you started Crochet and you ended up pitching Whitlock and Chapman. If something happened screwy late or if Chapman blew a game, yeah, we'd be feeling terrible.
Well, so that when I asked, did they do enough? I'm talking about getting into the play. I was nervous. We were going to wake up today and the game was going to get away from them and they've been swept by the Yankees and it's full on panic mode. So when I say, did they do enough? Mm-hmm. They have to get in now. That's what they have to do. That's the goal. Do we all want the number one wild card? Sure. I'd love three games at Fenway Park. Will we love them to get the division? Sure. I'd love them to skip around advance right to the divisional round, and then you're that much closer to the return of Roman Anthony. Like, sure, we all want that. But what do they have to do? What do they have to do? They can't completely fall apart. They have to make the playoffs. And so I think they just barely did enough. That doesn't make it a good weekend. It was not a good weekend for them. It was not a successful weekend for them, but they avoided full-blown disaster, which was the minimum they had to do. And I do think they did that. And I was nervous as that game went along. They jump out to an early lead, six runs. Everybody's getting on base. Everybody's getting hits. They're coming through with runners in scoring position, which they didn't do all weekend prior to that game last night. But then the Yankees are chipping away. Judge gets Crochet again. He's at his number a little bit, although Crochet's punched him out a ton.
I was going to say, it is a good back and forth.
He's hit some long home runs off Crochet.
Well, it's like two home runs to 13 strikeouts.
I thought they had a stat. Maybe this counted his White Sox career as well. I thought it was like
11 Ks.
I thought it was the three hardest hit balls or long furthest hit balls of Judge's career were off Crochet or something like that. Or maybe the three
struck him out like 12 or
three of the four longest he's allowed. I forget the exact stat.
Here he is. He is 3 for 15 in his career against Crochet. Two home runs, both solo shots, and 11 strikeouts for Crochet.
Okay.
So 3 for 15, that's a 200 average, but two long bombs.
Okay.
11 Ks.
Yeah. You said walks or no?
Zero walks.
Zero walks. So that is good. Mm-hmm. But he gives up the bomb to Judge. Mats comes in and gives up just an absolute moonshot to Caballero. And you're like, here we go. Whitlock, leadoff hit to Judge. He winds up punching out the side from there. Big strikeout to end the eighth inning. And then Chapman, who had given up runs in his last two outings after his long stretch of not doing that, not even giving up hits for a long time, ended up with a relatively clean inning or a clean inning in the ninth. And you go, okay, they did what they had to do. Not what you wanted them to do, but what they had to do to get into October.
I was kind of downplaying the Yankees lineup on Friday. It's a little bit better than I was giving it credit for. I was saying it was really just Judge. But, I mean,
Chisholm's going to go 30-30.
They sat Volpe. They can't play him anymore.
Well, Volpe sucks, but I'm saying, like, Cody Bellinger is having a good year. He's not what he was, but, like, he is having a good year. Like, he's digging in last night, and there's, like, 28 homers, 93 RBI, OPS in the 800s. I'm like, all right, he's pretty good.
Chisholm mixes in, like, these head-scratching, boneheaded plays, but he's knocking on the door 30-30,
One more home
think.
Run.
Yeah.
He's a home run shy of a 30-30 season, so I'm like, all right, maybe I was a little
They're a little
too,
better we give him credit for.
But that also speaks to, like, all right, you know, Crochet and Whitlock and Chapman. I mean, they had a million strikeouts yesterday. So, best on best, I'll still take the Red Sox in a series with the Yankees.
Me too. So they are three games up on Texas. They need to make the playoffs. I sent some panic out of Alex Cora.
Yeah.
I think I know what he was trying to do on Saturday. This is after they lost the opener on Friday, before they lost on Saturday afternoon, and certainly before yesterday's win. I think Cora, as a message to his players, didn't want them to get too far ahead of themselves, but this is the exchange. We played it for you earlier. It's worth another listen. This is Cora on Saturday afternoon prior to the middle game.
I think we should stop talking October, to be honest with you. There's a lot of stuff going on, and we have to play better. You know, I'm not saying we're in a bad spot, but I think, you know, we have to wait, you know, to see if October is part of this.
Okay.
I mean, I get it.
I get it as well. I think it's a message to the players. Like, we on the outside can talk about it, but I don't think he wants his guys to, like, guys,
let's not buy playoff tickets just yet.
We got work to do to get in there. I tweeted this when I saw that. Lou didn't like it. He called it a dumb comment, and I know
sick
it.
Sick brag, bro.
That Lou called me dumb. But so
you tweeted it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, gotcha. But
both.
If they don't, they are both strong. If they don't make the playoffs, I think they should fire the manager. I don't know if they will. But they have a
collapse.
They have a million injuries. Okay. Roman Anthony has been the key to their whole season. I don't think Cora's been great. I think he's been good enough. If they get into the playoffs, keep your job. I said if.
Yeah.
But if you blow a 5-game lead with 3 weeks to go, I don't really care what's going on with the roster and what injuries you've had. You as the manager have to get that team into the playoffs. If he doesn't, he should be out of a job.
Yeah, we talked about it at the time when Roman Anthony went down. Obviously, that was a huge blow, but they had a big, healthy lead, and the teams chasing him weren't very impressive. And you're like, all right, they're basically fighting for seeding is what it was. They did make an announcement today for the rotation in this upcoming series against the A's, and there's a pretty good breakdown. Sox Prospects on Twitter broke it down like this. So they have the off day today. Mm-hmm. Then they have a 3-game series with Sacramento. And our guy, Connelly Early, is going to start the opener.
Nice.
Then Giolito, then Bayo.
So no Tolley.
They're going to skip Tolley and Harrison. So sorry, Nick, your guy Harrison is going to get skipped.
Yep.
My guy?
Yeah.
Your guy.
Zero ERA with the Red Sox? Yeah, that guy.
Pretty good. So Sox Prospects points out, Bayo and Crochet will make two more starts regardless. But this, by moving it this way, allows Giolito to make a third on the final day, if necessary. And if needed, it makes Crochet available for game one of the wild card round.
And now that you're saying that, doesn't Giolito have, he has like a mutual opt-in clause where
if he hits a certain amount of innings.
The innings really matter. I forgot about that. So he's lined up for the last day if they need it.
Yep.
He may not start if they don't need it, which I got to look at what he's on track for innings, but he may have an issue with that. But anyway, keep going.
But then it could also get Crochet ready to go for game 1, too, mm-hmm. of the wild card round. But I don't think it, as much as we love Magnum PIG, I think skipping Tolley with everything that's on the line right now to bump up Early, and again, jury's out on Early, but let's see what he looks like. And then Giolito maybe getting one of your three main guys getting an extra start if it comes down to that is good.
Well, and here's the thing. Do I want the games at Fenway? Hell yeah. And I'd love them to chase down the Blue Jays in the division. They're closer to tracking down the Yankees than they are to missing the playoffs. It doesn't feel that way. But they are, after the win last night. They're what, a game and a half back in New York? They're 3 games up on the playoff spot.
But I was going to say, but they're also closer to missing the playoffs than they are winning the division.
No, well, that's true, for sure.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is I still would lean towards try to get Crochet lined up for the postseason. If you need him, obviously you can go to him. But try to get him lined up for the postseason because you can go to Seattle and win 2 out of 3. You can go to Houston and win 2 out of 3. Like, I'm not overly terrified at any of those teams would be my point.
Was their win, their playoff percentage last we checked was like 96,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
it dropped a lot.
90. It's only 6 points, but like over the weekend, it just dropped to 90.
Yeah.
So I mean, so that also tells you, though, they have a 90% chance of making the playoffs.
The manager should get him in. And I got inundated with these over the weekend. It's like, oh, here you go. Jones making excuses. Let's not blame Breslow for trading away Devers. But it's like, well, and let's not blame Cora for anything. Cora apparently wins either way. He gets him into the playoffs. He did an amazing job. He misses the playoffs. It's not his fault. I mean, talk about a no-lose situation. And this is coming from a guy who's overseen collapse after collapse after collapse the last couple of years. I mean, he hasn't made the playoffs since 2021. He's made it twice as manager here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to me, I would hold him. If he can't hold a 5-game lead with 3 weeks to go, it's 3 games with 12 games to go. He's got to get them in. And if he doesn't, I'd look at it. I don't know if Henry will or not, but that's what I would do. All apologies to Lou and everybody else. 617-779-7937. You can jump in here on Jones and Keefe. We'll get back to the Patriots. What's wrong with the defense? That's next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.